Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee. Hey, guys. Welcome, Richard. Kaylee, good to have you here on a, wow, it's a glorious Wednesday morning, isn't it?
It is. It is a great morning. And thank you, Andy, and thank you, everybody, for coming to, again, Southern Utah's first and only elder care radio program. And we are excited to be here this morning. We get a lot of calls and questions, and so we're just going to keep covering those. And anybody who has any additional questions, things that we haven't covered, or you're not sure of one of our answers, please give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. Our telephone number, 435-477-6999.
And you two are manning the phones, right? So we need to wait a few minutes till the show's over, because we're live here.
We have a couple of other people.
Oh, okay, cool. What's the number one more time again, Richard?
435-477-6999.
I like today you guys brought in some paperwork talking about some of the myths involved with hospice and palliative care. And I'm looking through the list. I'm going, yeah, actually, I have that question, too. And that one's good. And, you know, so I was going through the list. I'm like, that's pretty good.
Well, then let's answer the questions you think are important.
All right. Well, let's start off with, first of all, talking about hospital versus hospice. I guess a lot of people assume, well, hospice has something to do with hospital. Maybe you can clarify that a little bit.
They certainly have the same root word. Mm-hmm. But where hospice is a level of care that is very broad-based, with a focus on relieving symptoms and providing comfort, because when we get to a stage where hospice is appropriate, there may not be any cures available. Mm-hmm. Hospitals certainly want to focus on cures when they're available, but they will provide some level of comfort care also if there is no cure available. It's important for the patient and for the patient's family to understand when that transition happens. If they realize that they are no longer getting curative care and it is just a matter of comfort care, then you really want to assess what's the best level of comfort care that you can receive.
To talk about that a little bit more directly, sometimes we don't realize where we are in the prognosis. Mm. It's important to ask for your narratives and your medical records. We've talked about this multiple times in the past. Can't emphasize it enough. Ask for your plan of care and your doctor's narratives. In there, you will find a lot of information that maybe is a little uncomfortable for the doctor to discuss with you. It would be a really hard thing for the doctor to come to you and say, you know, my entire career, I've studied, I've gone to school to help heal you, and there's no longer a healing method available.
Yeah.
So sometimes, so that you don't give up hope, they continue to offer you treatments, but that might not be what you choose. If you really understood that the treatment was just a treatment without any curative hope at the end, perhaps you'd want to go home early and spend time with your loved ones and have the best quality of life at that point. But sometimes you don't know that.
So it's really important, I think, to focus on what's not being said. You know, when you're talking to your doctor and he's explaining things to you, if he has a plan towards cure, he should be able to explain that very well.
Lay it out for you.
That's right. He'll explain it to you. He'll be happy to provide you that. If, when you get done talking to your doctor, you know, phrases like, well, we're going to, you know, business as usual, or we're going to keep going the way we're going without any specific solution in the future. And again, every cure has an end.
Or if you start to think, okay, I understand what the doctor's talking to me about my illness, but in your mind you're still thinking, what does that mean? Ask those important questions.
That's hard, though. You know, when you're going in there and you have questions about things, but and the doctor tells you one thing, and it's hard to kind of shift that to, well, what about what I'm thinking and what about what I'm worried about? That's a hard thing to do.
It is. What I've noticed, though, is most people just kind of lay all their trust and decisions on the table and the feet of the doctor.
It's true.
And while, you know, I have all the utmost respect for the doctors, his opinions about what's best for you might be different than what you would choose. So you have to be involved in your care. You have to insert your questions in there so that you can come out with an outcome that is best for you and your family.
And I want you to know that, you know, doctors have training to try and engage in conversations. It may be difficult for them to start it, but if you can just just bridge that gap a little bit. Just step over that threshold through that door and say, okay, I want to have this conversation. Then it should be pretty easy for your doctor to follow through with that and help you. And again, the doctor has to be careful about having conversations that people don't want to have.
Right.
So you just need to let them know that it is one that you do want to have. You want to know more about the plan of care. You want to know what this protocol that you're going on is. If it's a drug, ask him what the goal of this drug is. If it is just to manage the symptoms, we're not going to improve, then we need to be aware of that. And then once we realize that we are on a palliative path, the question really needs to be, what's the best way to go down that path? Is it just the occasional visit from to a doctor and a continuing prescription, or are there other things that we can integrate into that that would be much more beneficial for the patient, to make it more comfortable for them, but also for the family? So those are questions. And again, we want to encourage the community to really consider doing this. If you really don't feel comfortable, it's a good idea to play act it at home. Just, with your spouse or with somebody, just say, okay, I'm going to try and ask questions that I want to ask my doctor. Once you say them once, it'll be easier to say them again.
And the other thing I think, too, might help is writing them down when you're away from the doctor. Okay. I know I've had situations where I've gone to the doctor and he's like, so do you have questions? And I'm like, I did, but I can't remember them.
And remember, your medical records are your medical records and you have a right to them.
Yeah.
So if you leave and you forget to ask for a copy of them, when you get home, call the doctor's office, the hospital, wherever it was, and get a copy of your medical records. That reminds me of something really important. I was speaking with our director of medical yesterday, and he brought up that one of the things that he finds really disheartening is when patients end up in the hospital, maybe they've had a fall or an emergency at night, and they end up in quick care or the hospital. They really believe that the hospital, because they give the doctor's name, they believe that the hospital then contacts their physician and lets them know that they're there.
Right.
You need to know that they don't.
That doesn't happen.
It does not happen.
Oh.
In fact, they will ask you a few questions like allergies or your loved ones, do you have any allergies? They'll pull any records that they might have had of your past history and kind of briefly thumb through those. But you need to realize that the person assigned to your care in the hospital is not working in connection with your actual primary care physician. In fact, they're making judgments and decisions based on your immediate situation without having a long-term history.
That's true.
So unless your loved one goes home and calls your primary care physician and says, hey, doc, my mom's in the hospital, my wife's in the hospital, he will not know and he won't be a part of your plan of care. If he knows, he can then call in and work with your assigned physician at that incident, in that case, and work with him. But the hospital has no obligation to call your primary care physician. And you should be aware of that, because sometimes patients leave the hospital and they're almost upset that their doctor never called them.
Right.
They go for a follow-up appointment and say, so when I was in the hospital last week, and their physician's like, what? You were in the hospital last week? And they feel like, why don't you know? Because there's no obligation for them to call. That's why.
So put that under the be your own best medical advocate.
Mm.
If you do need to go to the hospital, make sure that one of the first calls you make after you're there is to your doctor. Now, whether it's your doctor or their medical assistant, most doctors have a medical assistant. That may be a person that's easier to get a hold of. And if not the medical assistant, most practices have a practice manager or a office administrator. Those are all good people to get a hold of, whether that's to get your medical histories, your plan of care, or to notify your doctor that your circumstances have changed.
Right. I can assure you, your doctor will then call the hospital and be involved in that care at that point. But you just have to realize that he doesn't know unless somebody in your family calls him and lets him know that you're at the hospital.
I had a couple of back surgeries. My doctor, family care physician didn't know about him until after, he knew I had a back problem, but I actually had to tell him, I had my neck done and then I had my back done, lower back done.
And were you surprised that he didn't know since you put physician at the hospital?
Yeah, I thought somebody would have told him, but
they
didn't. It was me that told him.
Right.
So
being
so,
your best medical advocate.
Yeah, so take control of your medical history and care and involve great people. You know, when you go to the hospital, you get great care. It's great that you're involving those people in your medical care. But it's really your responsibility to be your manager of that.
You only get one body, right?
That's right. Yeah.
It's yours, and you're the one who has the most interest in it. Okay. So back to your question of hospice versus hospital. When we get to that level where we realize that we are in a palliative on a palliative path, where we are dealing with symptoms and there is no potential cure, and as we get older, those are realities that, we come to grips with. Let's look at what that care can be at a hospital or a facility. And there's a number of levels of facilities. There's just senior centers and senior facilities that are available. There are
skilled nursing, Alzheimer's clinics.
Yeah, memory care, those kind of things. And they're all going to be a little different in the level of care they provide. However, the style of care, if I use that phrase, is going to be somewhat consistent. If you were put in one of those facilities, you are going to have a bed, you are going to have a room possibly to yourself, and you are going to have a series of medical personnel that will be on a schedule to visit and check on you. That's what you can expect there. If you're appropriate for care at home and you can get the love and support of family, be in your own home environment where you're comfortable, and bring in the care that's available on the clinical side, nurses, CNAs, other staff that can manage your care or help manage your care, also having a medical director, a physician that's involved in your care, plus a number of other less clinical services that will support you and your family. We think, and maybe we're opinionated here, but we think it's better if it's possible to be at home and get that high level of care in addition to what you can get from family and friends.
Well, I think most people would probably rather recover at home.
And have you ever tried to sleep in a hospital?
Right.
Let me tell you.
They wake you up all night long to
they
take
do.
Your vitals.
They do.
One of the positive things that have come out of COVID, if you know there have been anything positive, it's the video telehealth. So while we really do want personal interaction with our doctors, how much better is it that we can be in the comfort of our own home and our doctors literally come to us through video conference?
Yeah.
We now
you can
have,
hold the phone up to your rash or whatever it is you have and say, here, doctor, what's that?
Yeah, or have a single nurse come to your door.
Right.
And check things out, take pictures, upload them to your doctor. Your doctor can see more patients, and you can still have an actual conversation with them. We did that last night with one of our patients who got on a video chat with our doctor and talked about the concerns and the how the medications were working and didn't have to leave their home, didn't have to wait in a waiting room. I just thought, wow, well, if there was one positive thing that came out of COVID, it's how we can visit with our doctors.
Awesome. Now, one of the other myths that that I keep hearing is, well, once you're on hospice, that's it. You're done. You can never go off hospice again until the end of your life. That's not true, is it?
Big, big myth. Remember, hospice is all about patient choice. In fact, it's one of the things that I think the government, Medicare, really got right was hospice. Everything about it is patient choice. Your choice of physicians, your physician can continue to cover your care, oversee your care. When you go on, as long as you're eligible, it's your decision in cooperation with your physician. And if you change your mind, you sign off. It's literally, I've changed my mind. I want to go curative again. You have that right. And it's also from hospice company to hospice company. Not all hospice companies offer the same therapies, the same amount of care, the same amount of volunteers and companionship and homemakers. We personally feel like we offer more than most. So you should know what you're not getting because hospice is all about choice, and it is literally sign a paper, you're with a new company, sign a paper, you're on hospice, you're off of hospice. It's very easy.
And you lose no benefits in doing that. It's not that you have a waiting period after you go off hospice that you can go back and into the traditional Medicare program. Mm-hmm. It's immediate. So there is no limitations, no downsides. Hospice, of course, we have no co-pays or costs that the patient would normally have to pay. So you'd be going back into a Medicare program where you might have those copays and other costs. But it is exactly as if you were never on hospice if you decided to opt out.
By the way, remember, hospice care, once you go from home health to hospice, everything's covered, virtually everything related to your terminal illness, pharmaceuticals, medical equipment, the nursing care, the homemaking care, any therapies that you have, it's all covered under the hospice benefit. Now, if you wanted extra things, like there's, you know, a certain amount of time that homemakers and caregivers and companions can come in, because really hospice is about supplementing the care at your home. Mm-hmm. So you could pay for extra 24-hour care if you wanted to. But really the cost for paying for a skilled nursing facility, $3,000 to $6,000 a month, versus paying for that supplemental care at home, it's still going to be less expensive at home, and you'll have more care at home, supplemental care with the hospice benefit. So it's really cost effective too.
And let me just expand that, you know, in the hospice program, it's more than just the patient. Certainly we want to cover the patient entirely, but we do also want to address and make sure that the caregivers, the family are also supported. You know, many of the things that we provide are intended to make it better for the caregivers, to help relieve their stress. And I can't say this enough, how important it is that, you know, for the caregivers, they are the unsung heroes. Mm-hmm. When you look at
for sure.
being that yeah. person that after spending your entire life managing the household and both of your lives, now has to take an even greater role in management of somebody who's less able to care for themselves.
Overwhelming. The reality is it's a second full-time job, isn't it? Yeah. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's why we want to come in and help not only the patient but the caregiver, because they need relief. They need respite. They need a break, a time to go to do their personal things, grocery shopping, banking, whatever it is.
And that segues into one of the other myths, is that hospice care ends when the patient dies.
No, we continue to care for the caregivers, those who are left behind, the loved ones through bereavement and supplemental support.
And the bereavement process, you know, if we've ever studied psychology or, you know, ever listened to somebody who's had some severe loss in their life, there's a process that you go through, and that process takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to be mm-hmm. there through that process so that we're available when things change. You know, my wife's example, when she lost her mother, she felt very comforted right from the beginning. She didn't have that anxiety, but it did come
on. I was actually going to bring that up. Why should you call Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care over any other hospice provider? Because we are the first palliative care, truly expansive, robust palliative care program in Southern Utah. The whole reason we came and opened this business was because of three very different hospice experiences we had with my parents when Richard's dad passed away. I told this story before, but I think it's important to note it again. We did not fully appreciate at the time the palliative program that was provided for my mom in Las Vegas. The hospice company there thoroughly involved us in the entire care planning. They helped us explore options. The nurse gave us ideas and focused on what was important to us and what was important to my mother. My mother happened to be very holistic in her beliefs. The nurses helped us find people and products that weren't readily available 17 years ago. We tried reflexology, ionic foot detoxing, juicing, aromatherapy, among other very irregular procedures. While these measures are not for everyone, my mother had a deep-seated belief in the natural medicines. So we tried everything. Our family felt like we had served our mother, created a wonderful bonding experience, and we never lost hope in the process. My mother passed away without regret. She had a storybook ending. My father did not have that same belief in natural medicines. We knew he had no desire to try any of the peculiar things that my mom did. And that was okay. That was his choice. And that's what palliative care is. It's about an individualized, diverse option according to what's important to you. What we didn't understand at the time was that we had the right to be a part of my dad's care planning. With my mom, the nurse just made us a part of it, and we didn't even realize we were being made a part of it. The nurses should have inquired as to what his end-of-life goals were and what we as a family wanted for him. Sadly, my dad died alone after being on hospice for only 3 days. We never expected him to pass away so quickly. We filled a regimen of drugs prescribed for him, put him to sleep, and was more than his heart could take. We missed being able to hold him and tell him how much we loved him when he passed away. He died in his sleep 3 years later, and I still have so much regret over the questions that I didn't ask and what I didn't know at the time. Palliative care should be about what the patient and the caregiver's choices are, not about what the nurses want for you, but what is important to you as a family, because they don't know what's in our hearts. We want to ensure that Southern Utah has that opportunity to make their own choice and to be involved in their care. We are here to educate people in Southern Utah, to ask questions, to be your own best medical advocate, to tell us what your desires and goals are, and we will explore that end-of-life experience with you to make it a beautiful experience that's filled with lasting memories like my mom's was.
Well said, Kaylee. Well said. You know, when we think about hospice care and, you know, end-of-life things, the number one thing that pops into people's head is, oh, late-stage cancer. They're dying of cancer. And that's it. That's what hospice is for. But that's not true either, is it?
No, there are a number of different diseases and conditions that we'll call life-limiting, right? Mm-hmm. We know that they are going to lead to our demise. All of those are hospice-eligible. Once we get to that point where any disease, any condition is reasonably expected that it is going to be the reason that we pass away, we become eligible for hospice. Hmm. And so for us, you know, recently COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Lung problems.
Lung problems, heart, you know, having a hard time breathing. That is probably an extremely common way that people come on hospice. And one of the areas where we can do a lot of good as far as providing comfort and eliminating some of the issues that that come with that. We've only got a couple of minutes left, I believe, and so let me just say that because of our unique position on hospice and how we're going about it, we've been invited by a group of specialists and physicians in a number of specialties who are putting together panels of conversation and airing those on YouTube, talking about the things that are dealing with us right, that we're dealing with right now. COVID was a big issue, so we had specialists get together and talk about and present to the community the issues that are, you know, that are there, and it's a great resource. I believe this month they're going to be looking at allergies. We're in allergy season. And so how do we deal with that? You know, what are some alternative options that may work very well? So if you want to call our office, we'll get you in touch with them, and you can do that. And then the other thing that I'd like to point out is that memory care is also one of those issues that is, you know, tragic. The Alzheimer's Association here in Southern Utah is headed by Mike Miller.
Yeah, great guy.
He is. He's a great guy. And if there are any questions, any need
of knowledge and resources.
Yeah, any need of resource, give them a call and they'll help you out.
Awesome. Well, you guys, another great show, emotional show a little bit, but another great show. Tell us again how we get a hold of Pathway, the best way to talk to you guys, and maybe put some of these plans together, because hospice and what hospice company we choose is our choice.
Absolutely your choice, and the doctor does not have to refer you, and so you should call around and you should find out what's being offered. Our telephone number is 435-477-6999, 435-477-6999, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And our webpage is pathwayhospicecare.com.
Perfect, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.